you know that every word you speak matters? Are your conversations making a difference? With a passion for words and a heart for conversation, Teresa Velarde is a self-professed word nerd, best-selling author, BizCat 360 columnist, and publisher. Children's books as well as fiction and nonfiction books are welcomed at WeBe Books Publishing and Book Endeavors, the imprints of her company, Authentic Endeavors Publishing. Whether written or spoken, Teresa strives to encourage and inspire meaningful conversations that make a difference. Here's the host of Conversations That Make a Difference, Teresa Velarde.
Hey everyone, and welcome to Conversations That Make a Difference. I'm Teresa Velarde, your host for this time of conversation that will surely change your world. I wanted to just take a minute to let you know that you can listen to Dream Vision's Conversation That Make a Difference on Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. The first and third Tuesday at 5 p.m. we are live, and then the rest of the month at 5 a.m. and 5 p.m. you can listen to the replays. You can even ask Alexa, can you play Dream Vision 7 Radio Network? And she will respond. I don't want to say that too loud because sometimes Alexa chimes in, right? So, okay. Before we get started, before I introduce my guests, I'd like to start with a prayer. So we are going to start with a serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And I also want to say that it is by God's grace that we are, all of us, fabulous, blessed, and highly favored, living in our greatness, using our gifts and talents, making a difference in the lives of others with passion and purpose, and all of God's great universe is conspiring in our favor. And together we say, amen.
Amen.
Amen. We gratefully say that. So let me introduce my guests today in no particular order. We're going to share some of the information that they shared with us in their stories in the fourfold formula for all things wellness. I am excited about this. There's four sections and body. Let's see. They're not in this order, but heart, spirit, mind, and body. Is that correct? Did I get the right order, Peggy? Yay. Awesome. All right. So we're going to talk to these authors. And let me just tell you who they are. Andy Scarantino is a mindset and transformational coach specializing in identity work. Andy has an MA in sociology from Columbia University, New York. Her work incorporates how macro level systems contribute to individuals' arrested development. She is creator of her own show, a Get the F Off podcast. And we'd like to hear, we're going to hear from her very shortly. Lejeune Persephone, did I say that correctly?
Yes, you did.
Awesome. She's a writer and editor, and she loves to travel and explore other cultures. She currently works as a technical writer in the IT industry. And after walking through a difficult season, she now has a strong desire to help those who are not ready to speak up for themselves find their voice. As a result, she's working on launching her first blog, Pivoting Perspectives. Oh, I love that. Where she plans to explore the joy and purpose that can arise from challenging circumstances. Welcome, Lejeune.
Thank you.
Peggy Williams has been a certified personal trainer, sports performance nutritionist, personal and executive health, wellness, and life coach for over 30 years. Peggy is an entrepreneur, author, and host of the Coach Peggy Show. She is also the executive producer of Coach Peggy Real Time, a transformational docuseries. Peggy hosts wellness retreats, is a featured contributor for Biz Catalyst 360, an international online magazine. She spent more than 20 years, that's a lot of time, in the corporate wellness and has managed multi-million dollar medical clinics. Her unique business and worksite wellness programs have earned her multiple awards. Yay! She has two sons and a grandson who I know she adores. She loves all things beach and sunshine and lives in Florida with her better half. Keith Zygand, aka Ziggy Salvation. I love this name. I love it, by the way. He's a husband, a father, and a master barber with over 20 years experience. When he's not behind the barber chair, he's often found spending time with his family, taking trips to Legoland. Oh, how fun. With his wife and kids, and living live streaming video gameplay on Twitch. Ziggy, welcome. I'm so excited for this conversation. And Ziggy, we're going to start with you. I'm going to your story first. So the name of your story in this book is From Behind the Barber Chair. I'm going to read this passage that really touched me. So my average client sits in my chair for 14 minutes. The level of comfort and confidence a client can establish in that short time frame still astonishes me. Every time a client steps out of my chair, I focus on at least one morsel of the moments they have shared. Get the page turned, Teresa, with me. I embed it. In my opinion, the genuine connection is what makes getting your haircut an experience versus one more thing you need to get done that day. The next time I see that person, I first do a check-in by simply asking how they are, how they're doing, and I follow up with memory from our last connection. Instead of just providing a service, I create a relationship. I love you already. one of the things that I, who I am, I'm like you. I am a person who, rather than just having a conversation with somebody, I really like to see who they are, be part of their world in any way that I possibly can, remember something simple about them so I can bring it to them the next time. Are you a barber or are you a therapist or are you a coach or all of the above?
I'm all of them. I am a marriage counselor. I am a divorce attorney, free little chat before you even go for it. I'm an addiction counselor. I'm a youth counselor. I do it all under one hat. And you don't really think about that, nor do you know about it until you're licensed, legal, and thrown to the wolves. Yeah.
I would imagine that sitting in your chair, you hear lots of stories. Is there something anonymously, of course, that you can say was a life-changing conversation for both you and the person who was sitting in the chair that you can share a little bit about?
As far as life-changing goes, I mean, you get a lot of little ones. The ones that really stand out the most are the ones that you're giving the guy the haircut before he proposes, or you're giving the entire groomsmen party a haircut before they walk down that aisle for the forever. Like, you're a part of all of these things. You know a guy for 15 years and he brings his first grandchild to you to cut their hair. Like, they didn't think, let's just find a shop. They chose you because of the history and the rapport that you build them. It starts off, you know, kind of being this hobby. Okay, I cut my buddy's hair. Okay, now I'm doing it for a career. Now you're ingrained in what you would think would be 15. You know, everyone says you can count 5 good friends on your hands throughout your lifetime. Behind the barber chair, you ingrain in thousands of families. We feel guilty because we can't remember everybody. But the reason I try to make it such a special 15 minutes is because we have cell phones, we have computers, we have the internet, everything's going so fast. How many people stop and say, how are you? Mm-hmm. If you can take that 15 minutes and break away from everything just to complain or boast or brag or whatever, that's what sets the future with that person. Whether it's they can move in 2 months and we had 2 months of good conversations, but I might get a postcard, I might send them a Christmas card. You never know. So as far as, I mean, stuff like that is the stuff that really stands out. Those interactions, those moments, being a part of them, even though it might seem minuscule time frame wise, is something that's going to set with them forever. Yeah. You know, and it really flexes your brain as far as how much you can remember, because you don't remember by the end of the day, but for some reason 2 days later the entire day hits you. Or those moments hit you, you know. It's really, really something that I never thought I would cherish until to have done it for so long.
And you've been doing this for how many years now?
I started when I was like 16 for my buddies. I'm 37 now. So like 20, 21, 20 years legally. We'll say it that way. Almost 22 altogether. Yeah. I think my first haircut for the public, I did in seventh grade technology class. We had to do like a project in school about, you know, what do you want to do when you grow up? You have to do like a presentation. So I took my father's old mannequin head, who's just this god awful looking thing named Susie Q, and I did a flat top on her for like the class. And the hair is just horrible. She'd been kept in the tote bin, so she smelled weird. And here I am, and all my buddies are laughing at me. Well, as many as people laughed, half as many asked for a haircut. That's when I knew I was on to something.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. And I love that.
Trace, I have to interrupt. Ziggy's mic is coming in and out so bad that on YouTube it's coming out pretty much dead air. Well, so
I can fix that.
Because we get a real shot of volume and we get nothing. And it's just all choppy.
That's how far I'm sitting. That should be a little better.
That's even better. Thank you.
Okay. Absolutely.
So will you tell the seventh grade story again real quick?
Yeah, so seventh grade, it was journalism / technological class, whatever you want to call it, and we had to do presentations about what we wanted to do going forth as adults. So you see people saying, I want to be a programmer, I want to be a game developer, I want to be a fireman, all the typical stuff, and I'm like, hey, I want to be a barber. And my father reached into his tote bin of stuff from forever ago, and he found the Susie Q dummy head, which is the standard thing you get in your kid when you sign up for barber school, and you can typically get about 16 haircuts off of her. She starts from like butt length hair and you bring it all the way up till there's almost nothing left because they charge you $50 a piece for these things. So there was one with like medium length hair left over, and I gave her a flat top, and of all the friends that were kind of poking fun, like, oh god, look at this chubby funny guy cutting hair in the front of class. I'd say at least half of the guys that made fun of me were asking for haircuts off school grounds.
That's fun. And so you became the class barber.
Well, yes. Sort of. I didn't realize at the time, but I couldn't get away with anything in school, period, because I didn't realize not only all my teachers, but all my friends were going to my father down the road for a haircut. So I had zero privacy. And then come to find out 5 years later that my friends were ratting on me for a buck off a haircut for beer money to let them know what I was doing wrong in school. It was phenomenal. Great friends.
Oh my goodness. And I bet you have great relationships with some of those people still in your world, right?
Lifelong. I'm one of those people that if I'm going to give you my time and my energy, you're kind of stuck with me until you make it more than blatantly rude that you don't want to be around anymore.
Yeah, I got it. Yeah, I get it. I'm not going to tell you how old I am or how long I've been out of school, but some of the people that I went to second grade with are still in my life. And that's an awesome gift to have.
Nursery school. Yeah. I got it. Yeah.
Good for you. Yeah. Good for you. I'm going to go over to Lejeune right now. Your story. Your story is discovering a pathway to peace. And I just want to read a short paragraph here from yours. My attempt to remain strong since my mother's death was already starting to take its toll, shouldering the responsibility of executing matters when my mom passed away and dealing with the fallout thereafter robbed me of grieving properly. I can relate. Now there seemed to be another death on the horizon, and once again, I jumped in fix-it mode. I think you might be my sister somewhere along the line here, okay?
Another mother.
Yeah, from another mother, exactly. It was exhausting, and the emotional pressure was building. Thankfully, I had begun working with a mentor just 2 months earlier. She was helping me process my mom's death and the overall lack of control I was feeling in other areas of my life. Okay, so I can relate to the mom passing. I can relate to some of the things that you're probably going to share right now. I totally get the feeling of lack of control. And sometimes I find myself in situations today where I feel like I'm out of control, where there are so many things going on and I can't tend to them all at once. So it feels like I'm standing in a whirlwind. You know what? The picture just came to me. If you watch the Big Bang Theory, you see Sheldon every once in a while and the ball in all where all the balls are. And he's there, yeah, gets up and says, Bazinga. And then he goes back down again. That's how I feel my life.
Bazinga.
Time. Bazinga.
Yeah.
So what?
Bazinga.
So tell me how you go from that overwhelming feeling and you feel like your lack of control, you're in a state of lack of control to finding that peace you speak of in your title.
Well, you know what? I had to come to the realization that I couldn't do everything myself. Mm-hmm. You know, so that was the first thing. I had to make sure I found community. I found community in my mentor and friends that came alongside me during that time. You know, I was always the one being there for other people. And now that my mom had passed and I was going through, you know, this huge life change, you know, of a divorce, this was the time that I couldn't be an island by myself. I really had to look to others to really help me as I, you know, navigated this process. And that's when I realized, you know, I had to really take a step back, you know, and started to, you know, do some evaluation in myself and actually start doing a lot of self-care because I was not taking care of myself well. I found I wasn't loving myself well and I wasn't giving myself grace, you know, and I really had to push pause. You know, because I really felt like things were starting to come apart. You know, it's just like, you know, when you see the waves come along the shoreline and it just takes away a little bit of the sand, I just felt like, you know, little pieces of me were just, you know, just coming apart little by little. And I was like, okay, I need help. So I really had to reach out to community to get there.
Yeah, I think you bring up a really, really, really good point. Two things that come to my mind. Community is so important. And by the way, Grateful Hearts, the gratefulheartscommunity.com is coming. And on Facebook, there is a group. So if you don't have a community and you want to be in a community that has people who are practicing gratitude as part of their personal self-care and well-being, because it fits into those categories, go there and share some of what you have to be grateful for with that community. I think that, you know, the realization that we can't do everything by ourselves and we put ourselves last, I know that we're related somehow because I always get to the bottom of the list instead of starting at the top where we should be every morning. And you're supposed to take care of yourself first. Take care of rule number one, take care of Teresa first. Do you practice that now?
Oh, absolutely. I definitely do. I do have my slip ups every now and then, but I, you know, in the mornings I make sure, you know, I get up, I, you know, do a little bit of meditation. I go for a little walk or, you know, go out to the gym to work out if I can. I'm doing some push-ups in the house, something just to kind of get, you know, to take care of myself first. I got into the habit of before the day, you know, before the sun rose, you know, I wanted to make sure that I poured into myself first because pretty soon there's going to be a text. Someone's going to be wanting something from me. And I didn't want to feel so depleted again. And that's mm-hmm. where I found myself 2 years ago. And I was like, okay, you know what? Take care of me first. And everything else is secondary. Self-care really is not selfish at all. You know, mm-hmm. one of the things that come to mind a lot for me is because I'm traveling a lot and, you know, I've seen that little spiel that the flight attendants give you, know, put the mask over yourself first. Yes. And there's a reason for that. You know, they themselves say that if they're in an emergency situation, they are trained to take the mask from you, the passenger, put it on themselves first because they in turn can revive you, but you can't help anybody else if you passed out. Yeah. You know, so that's where I'm like, you know what, it is so important. It's non-negotiable anymore. Yeah. It's non-negotiable. So, taking care of me first. And I have to remember that I don't have to feel guilty about it. I don't have to feel guilty about it. I can help somebody else if I don't want to, you know, for the first help myself.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with you. And there's so many things that you can call upon, so many phrases you can call upon. Like the illustration of the mask on the plane is absolutely a great way to talk about self-care. It's not selfish. It's you can't help anybody else until you help yourself first. And you can't give from an empty cup. And I had I had a coach a while ago give me an illustration of this about, you know, when you go to a wedding and they have all the champagne glasses all lined up and they're in a tower, they fill from the top first and you spread out from the overflow. So you fill yourself up first and then you give from the overflow. Yes.
Excellent illustration. Absolutely. Absolutely. Because if you have enough, if you have enough in yourself, then you can serve others, you know, because I do believe I have a servant's heart, but I was, it wasn't a wise way of doing it before, but now I'm learning, still learning, you know, how to do it better going forward. Yeah.
So how do you serve people, Lejeune?
I definitely believe I serve others by sharing with what I've gone through. You know, experience does teach wisdom. So I do try to, you know, when asked, I'm setting my boundaries, very clear boundaries now. I think I was chatting with Peggy today and I let her know that I'm blocking off time so that I can focus on stuff that I need to do today and I wasn't going to be going on social media. So I make sure that I try to stay away from the negative energy of all that. So of things, so that way I can be a positive encourager for people. I do find myself being a cheerleader for others, and I want to continue doing that. So for me, you know, serving others is something that comes naturally. It's something that I enjoy doing, and I want to be able to do it from a space of being happy in what I'm doing and not, you know, from a space of being so depleted and then I'm miserable or, you know, doing it begrudgingly. You know, I want to be able to just freely give of my time and my energy and whatever I have to offer the world.
Joyfully, correct?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you, Lejeune. We're going to go to a break in just a minute, but Peggy, I know that the Fourfold Formula is available in two formats, the book, the print book, and the Kindle book. And I know you have some specials going on right now for our audience members who might like to get their copy of the Fourfold Formula. There are so many great stories in here. I don't know who wouldn't want to have this book. It's amazing. So what are you doing that everybody can get their copies?
We're running a special for special people. Yes, we are. All right. You know, I always have something to say. Okay, 48 hours. So expiring at noon on Thursday, the 22nd. Until then, you can get your Kindle version for $1.99. That's right. I said $1.99. You heard me right. $1.99 for Kindle version. Why is Kindle important, you guys? We don't want to carry our book everywhere. But do you want a book? Yes. How can you get an autographed book? Let me tell you. This is unrehearsed. Sorry, Teresa. Email me your invoice or your receipt because you just bought a book on Amazon. You're going to email me your receipt. You're going to get a free autographed book and you get to give one away. Buy one, give one. Welcome.
I love it. I love it.
That's for the rest of September. First five people every single day get an autographed book. First five people, buy one, get one.
So where do they send the copy of the receipt to?
Very important. Thank you. It's peggy@allthingswellness.com.
Okay. So when you get your book, send a copy of your receipt to peggy@allthingswellness.com and get an autographed copy of the book. Buy one for yourself and give one to someone else. And with that, we're going to take our first break. We'll be right back.
What if dreams can diagnose your life? What if we can meet the love of our life in dreams? Join host Kat O'Keefe Canavas, the number one internationally best-selling author of Dreams That Can Save Your Life, written with Duke University medical doctor Larry Burke. Dreaming Healing is where we'll explore dreams, research, and interpret dreams from you, the caller. Dreaming Healing shows can be heard every Tuesday at 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. Eastern, with live shows on the first and third evenings at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific Time on syndicated Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. Come live your dreams out loud with Kat. Are miracles real? Can you move from mayhem to miracles? 30 prominent authors say yes as they share their high fives and down lows of challenges, abuse, addiction, and love. Experience hope, the magic elixir of miracles, through the personal stories of New York Times bestselling authors James Redfield, Dr. Bernie Siegel, Sister Jenna, Reverend Temple Hayes, and many more.
If you like bestsellers, Chaos to Clarity, and Crappy to Happy, you'll love Crying and Laughing Through Mayhem to Miracles, Sacred Stories of Transformational Hope, available now on Amazon and in bookstores worldwide.
Did you know that every word you speak matters? What you say and how you say it can make or break a relationship or shift the outcome of any situation. Are your conversations making a difference? Faith in God, gratitude, authenticity, and giving are Teresa Velarde's heart. It's in this spirit that she's focused on making a difference in the lives she's blessed to touch. Conversations That Make a Difference is now on syndicated Dream Vision 7 radio network every Tuesday at 5 a.m. and 5 p.m. Eastern Time, with live call-in shows every first and third Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern.
Omega Institute, offering workshops, retreats, and online learning dedicated to awakening the best in the human spirit. For over 40 years, Omega has seen more than 1 million people come through its doors to grow, learn, and find a greater sense of purpose. With over 350 workshops to choose from, Omega offers something for everyone. Located in Rhinebeck, New York, just 90 miles north of New York City, Omega's natural environment and quiet pace allow for extraordinary experiences to unfold. Learn more at eomega.org or call 877-944-2002. Again, 877-944-2002.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
And we're back. Thanks for joining us again. We're moving right through the fourfold formula for all things wellness. And we're going to go to the mind section. And we're going to talk to Andy about her story, which is titled, oh my goodness, I went in the middle here. It began alone on an airport bench. That invites me right in. Great title. All right. So there's so much of your story that is all of your stories that I can relate to. So anybody who thinks that their experience is something that no one else experiences, let me correct you. And for those of you who are afraid to share your stories, I want to say to this group of people, I am so impressed with the courage that you took to you grabbed hold of to tell your stories. And in doing so, you have opened the door for someone else who has experienced something that you've gone through to get through it, because you came through to the other side and were willing to share it. So for that, on behalf of everybody, I say thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Okay, so Andy, now we're going over here. No alcohol on Sundays until 10 o'clock, they said. It was Sunday. Damn. Okay, probably best. I asked for Diet Coke. They forgot it. I hated asking twice. I knew the business and hated my life when I was working in it. And I assumed they did too. Yet, I couldn't take one more person forgetting about me. May I please have that Diet Coke? I'm so sorry. Oh, of course, the person said. I have no memory if it was a man or a woman. At that point, they were an object, just like I perceived myself when working in that situation. My next memory is sitting on a chair at the gate and having a random woman ask me if I was okay. I barked at her and I was cruel. At that moment, I realized I had created the entire situation because it matched the belief I held about myself. That was one rock bottom. It took more than that before I stopped drinking. My sobriety doesn't mean much to me, but my recovery does. It's hard to pinpoint when my recovery started. I believe it happened right there at the airport gate. My visceral and angry response toward the woman who showed concern was enough to open my eyes to how much I had been disrespecting myself. Wow. Massive. That is one massive statement. How much I had been disrespecting myself. And anybody who has suffered with any kind of addiction, any kind of, I can't give up to this, I can't do that, whatever, can own that statement. Andy, talk to me about this.
So that was the night that I was left at the airport. I was left at the airport by my ex-boyfriend. It was the middle of the night. I didn't have a flight home. We had had an argument. We'd been drinking all night, and I was, and he was upset with me. You know, our memories are different of why. Irrelevant, really. But at the time of my life, I was really out of alignment. I was working at a job that I couldn't stand. I weighed almost 200 pounds. I'm 5'3". You know, I smoked over a pack a day. I drank to excess till 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning every single night. I was working in a restaurant night shift. So that was pretty common, you know, 4 o'clock bars closed in New York. And I was so misaligned. And after, and I just kept kind of getting further and further and further from myself. And then we had that argument. He left me at the airport. He went home. He turned his phone off. He went to sleep. And, you know, it's the middle of winter. And it was a very long night, and I spent a good bit at the beginning feeling bad for myself, victim consciousness, all of that. And when I was finally able to secure a flight, you know, when I was able to, when the airport started to open up, you know, that first experience I wrote about was in this, with this restaurant, when I tried to actually order alcohol, you know, and it had been a Saturday night. So this is Sunday morning. And then they said that to me, and I asked for a soda. I had a big diet soda addiction at the time. And like, these people just forgot it. And I had been like, I was so discarded. Like they just left, he just left me there, you know, and I had felt so abandoned and discarded by everyone in my life. And I couldn't take another person doing that. And then somebody finally showed care and concern at the gate when I was sitting there, because I had been, you know, I obviously looked like crap. You know, we'd been drinking all night. I'd been crying all night and sitting at the airport all night. And it was a morning flight, probably. I think it was, the flight was 8:30. And she asked, "Are you okay?" And I was like, "I'm fine." Mm-hmm. And I was, and just this anger I had towards her. And I'm like, oh my God, like, this is how I'm acting. Like, I've created this whole thing. I have pushed people away this entire time. And this is a direct reflection of how I've been treating myself this entire time. Everything that's this situation was created by me and my lack of respect, my lack of self-respect, my lack of care, concern for myself. And so I went home and I got on that plane. And that was like the moment, you know, that moment that, you know, we say clearing the mirror, like coaches hold a mirror. You know, we show you the blind spots you can't see. And a lot of times people can't see their own blind spots. And when you are kind of in the throes of addiction, whatever capacity that may be, you can't see it. You're running a loop. And it was that moment that it was just like the veil was thin enough that I could just see myself. And I was like, this is ridiculous. Like this is all my. And so it became, I went home from that experience and I began to take responsibility. I mean, I say in the story, I went home and I lost 52 pounds. And like I just said, I went home and did it.
Oh, but that was so easy. I wish that was easy.
But it was. But it was. That was the thing. It was. And that's why it was written that way, because it was. Because once I started to not disrespect myself and made choices that were in service rather than spite, it was easy. Mm-hmm. I mean, and every choice became of service as opposed to spite. My nutrition and getting that in order. My friend of mine invited me to a wellness program called the Whole Life Challenge, which she prefaced with, "I know this isn't something you would usually do." And this is why, you know, I do identity work. I had so much identity looped into who I was. And I was the person that drank the whiskey with the men at the bar till 4 o'clock. I was a big tough bee, you know, like I was that person. She said, "But I think this would be really good for you." And I was like, you know, I'm too tired to fight. I'm too tired to fight. My ego is tired. I'm going to just let it go. I'm going to do this. And I started learning just basic things about my health, my body. I quit smoking. I stopped drinking diet soda. I used to drink 2 to 3 liters a day. Now it's water all the way. I am sober now. I didn't stop drinking for 2 years, almost 2 years after that occasion. Because my sobriety doesn't really mean much. Like I feel better without it. My life is better without drinking. You know, it's better without drinking. It's much better. But recovery can mean a lot of things. And in that moment at the airport, my recovery started. My sobriety didn't start then. You know, I cut down on my drinking, but I kept drinking to excess 1 or 2 days a week. But that moment at the airport was when I started recovering like bits of myself. Yeah. So that's what...
You started to say it. recovering bits of myself. Mm-hmm. What for people who don't, who may be stuck in an addiction, be it alcohol or whatever else, if you can define for me in a short, couple of short phrases, the difference between sobriety and recovery so that people can see the difference. So
I love to quote my partner, Martin John. He says that sobriety is a beverage choice, and that's exactly what it is. Sobriety is a beverage choice. It's a pretty awful beverage, and you know, and in terms of like sobriety with other substances, sobriety can apply to other substances, but those substances are just simply pacifiers to the real problem. Like there's not you're drinking, you're smoking, you're gambling, your porn addiction, like any of those things are not the problem. They're results, they're symptoms of a problem. We tend to, when we feel lack or we feel out of alignment with ourselves, we seek out these pacifiers to soothe ourselves in a lot of ways. What happens within our lives is that we all are born knowing everything. And then we build programs based around what our parents teach us, society, school systems, you know, economics, you know, all these things. And we build these programs, ego structures, patterns, neural pathways harden. And through that, we lose ourselves. We start acting in a way that often is misaligned. When we feel misaligned, we feel out of control and we want to pacify that. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like if your computer gets, you know, crashes and you need to restore your hard drive, what do? You recover it. You know, if your phone, you have to restore it to backup, you recover it. Like with yourself, I think people equate the term recovery with sobriety, but it's not. You're just recovering because we're all born and we're all in touch with that light. Like if you ask somebody what they want, you know, like people knew what they wanted when they were 6 years old. Like people had passion and people had, you know, people just wanted to be curious. And we didn't know how to pay taxes at 6 years old, but we knew how to be curious. We knew how to ask questions. We knew how to explore. And we lose that. And then sometimes we just feel powerless about it because we're not even sure why the program that's running is running. And so to just get back to that natural state of being is really powerful. And that for me was what started at the airport, getting back to that being that's talking to you right now. I got communication is one of my, what I consider a superpower, and I enjoy it. And I always enjoyed it since I was like a child. Yes. And I had lost that. So that's just an example.
And that's a good example too. Yeah. And you know, I think we all have to have that, what I call the come to Jesus moment in the mirror. You know, I had one that I asked myself two questions: who are you and why are you here? And I had to look at it at that point. I had to look at it from two perspectives. Why was I in this marriage? Why was I in the marriage I was in? And, you know, who was I? I lost myself in that whole thing. And then what was my reason for being on this earth? You know, I'm glad that you talked about it being recovery and remembering who you are. I recently put a journal together, and on the inside of it, I wrote, enjoy the journey as you remember, you know? Yeah. So, and that was, yeah. Anyway, good stuff, Andy. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. And Ziggy already knew who he was when he was in seventh grade and did his first haircut, right, Zig?
I was always the guy that wasn't doing what Dad did. So, like, when my dad was a boiler operator, I was reading, like, fireman instructions and pneumatic code. And then when he was, like, working at the dairy, I was going to sling milk when I was older. It didn't matter what I was going to do. As long as Dad did it, I was there.
There you go. Building relationships. There you have it. Peggy, Miss Peggy. I love your story called Fat Eyes. I'm not going to say what I was going to say. All right. So you, my dear, are one of those people who people like me are like, why can't I have that kind of why can't food be that way with me? Like, you know, you were tall, you had the thin body, you ate whenever you wanted to eat, you were hungry, you weren't hungry. You're one of those people I was like, oh man, I wish I was more like her, because and nothing stays on your body. But you worked, you were a fitness buff, if you will. You trained and you trained for competitions. I just, bodybuilding and competing in Miss Fitness made me feel like a powerhouse. And for the first time, I didn't mind people looking at me. And that's the other thing, you know, the body image thing, the body dysmorphia stuff that we go through. I'm sure I'm sure you can speak into that. But here's what I want to read. During the peak of my competitions, I became pregnant. Same song, second verse. I loved being pregnant, loved eating for someone else, and continued to lift and train clients. But retired from a competition. 10 years later, at age 37, I decided I was cured. I helped create an eating disorder coalition, only to remove myself a few months later. Just listening to others share their stories tossed me into the perfection fire. Hold on to that phrase for a second. I couldn't clear the smoke around my own feelings and thoughts about eating and working out. I not only began recognizing my true issues with food and body dysmorphia, but I also began to uncover the depths of my mental and physical health. It was at this time I recognized I had fat eyes. Okay, girl, talk to me.
First of all, I don't want to. I would love to deflect right now, which is one of my superpowers. Before I tell my story, first of all, you can see why I have these three people in my book, because they're beautiful souls. We didn't just fill this book because we wanted to fill the book. I was really particular, specific, and it was energy-based. But I also wrote the book. I learned a lot about myself, and I wrote it, I think, to deflect. It allowed me to have 39 other people to hold their stories, their personal issues. And I have been a coach for 33 years, and there's a reason for it. You know, you get to work on other people's stuff. And, you know, the benefit of being older is you get to look back. You get to look back at what you did and what you learned and what you do better. And for me, and many people with addiction, or to me personally, this is my story, so I get to tell it. That's what I always say. It was about control or not having control. So I would go into those places when I couldn't have control about other things. So I would say, you know, I can control what I look like. I control whether I eat or not. I can control whether I sleep. I can control whether I let people in. Like, I own that space. And it was very gradual for me. My perfection syndrome just happened. I'm a firstborn. I'm a type A. I'm a Capricorn. Sorry. But through high school, there's just all these, I felt, expectations, and I nailed them. And then I got into a field where everything was extremely accepted. You know, as a trainer, I was opposing coach. So you look at everybody from their striated deltoids and you're like, hey, just over the cuff, we got to work on that. So you're able to hide in that perfection place where you look at bodies as artistic forms and sculptures. And so I competed along with that. So it just hid. You know, I didn't know I really had an eating issue until I was 98 pounds my senior year of high school. And I realized I was eating, you know, saltine crackers and Coke and maybe a Snickers bar at lunch. And I was hiding my meals in the trash because I was always involved in sports, and every single event you could be involved in or school extracurricular activity I was. So I come home 11 or 12 o'clock at night. My mom would have a meal prepared for me. So I just got into this habit of hiding in the trash. So I didn't have to deal with like why I wasn't hungry or why I didn't want to eat or why I had other things to do. Mm-hmm. And I eventually got caught. And I wasn't doing it intentionally at all. I never had anorexia or bulimia or any under eating issue because I intended it. I still struggle with it because I got too much to do. And I get to that place where psychologically I tell myself, you got stuff to do. And I still don't get a hunger mechanism. I can go days before I get hungry. And I remember my oldest child at one point in time, I think he was 10. And I was standing in the kitchen. And there's phases where you think you have it nailed. You're okay. He was about 10 and he came up to me and everybody was eating and I had the meal all planned and everything. And I was just standing there kind of puttering around. And he said, you're not going to eat with us again? I said, what do you mean again? And he said, you haven't eaten with us for 3 days. And I said, what? And he looked at me, and I mean, this is not very nice for him to say, but he said, you're fading away and your butt looks like you're a Chinese woman. Like, literally, he said that. I'm like, I don't know what that means, but I guess I'm a rail or something. But
wait. I don't want to interrupt you. I really don't. But I'm
going to give you a commercial.
Catch your breath. We have to go to commercial. Okay.
I know all about this.
Hang on, girl. We'll be right back.
I'm glad, actually. Thank you.
You're welcome. We'll be right back.
Darkest hours to brightest moments. Transformation from despair to happiness. And chaos to clarity. Real people, real pain, real healing. Life-threatening illness, death, abusive relationships, divorce, and overcoming addiction are challenges these men and women faced head-on. See how they emerged stronger and happier. Buy the new book, Chaos to Clarity, Sacred Stories of Transformational Change by Reverend Patricia Caginello and Kathleen O'Keefe Cannabis. Available on sacredstoriespublishing.com and worldwide through Amazon and other retailers.
In a world facing annihilation, a miraculous African nun rises to become the first female pope through a web of war, murder, and betrayal. Loved by some, hated by many, she becomes the deadly target of Islamic terrorists and her own cardinals as she introduces a new vision that will either save humanity or accelerate its destruction. Four people must race against a nuclear holocaust to learn her astonishing secret. Pope Annalisa is available at petercanova.com, Amazon, and other online booksellers and bookstores worldwide.
Did you know that every word you speak matters? What you say and how you say it can make or break a relationship or shift the outcome of any situation. Are your conversations making a difference? Faith in God, gratitude, authenticity, and giving are Teresa Velarde's heart. It's in this spirit that she's focused on making a difference in the lives she's blessed to touch. Conversations That Make a Difference is now on syndicated Dream Vision 7 radio network every Tuesday at 5 a.m. and 5 p.m. Eastern Time, with live call-in shows every first and third Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern.
Why are we here? How can we be happy? Questions asked from millennials to boomers. Crappy to Happy, Sacred Stories of Transformational Joy answers them using true stories of grit, grace, and love. James Redfield, author of The Celestine Prophecy, wrote in the foreword, "This book is a seminar about emerging truths and offers grounded solutions through the art of the comeback." Dr. Bernie Siegel, a contributing author, wrote, "Bodies die, but spirits and consciousness survive and recycle." So, grab some tissues, open your book, and prepare to cry and laugh till it heals. Crappy to Happy by Reverend Ariel Patricia and Kathleen O'Keefe Cannabis. Available from Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and booksellers worldwide.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
And we're back. Okay, Peggy. I'll give you a second to catch your breath, because I just want to remind everybody, if you do not have your copy of the Fourfold Formula for All Things Wellness, go to Amazon, buy a copy. Kindle versions right now are $1.99. This book right here of 40 stories is, what did you say it was? A pound and a quarter or something like that?
Yeah, 1.4.
There's a lot of stuff in there. It'll leave you feeling lighthearted at the end, I promise. You get one, buy one, and send the receipt over to Peggy at allthingswellness.com, and she'll send you an autographed copy that you can either keep for yourself and give the other one away to your friend, or grace them with an autographed copy of the book. Okay, so.
You're hired. Good job.
We're going back to your story, Peggy. You're not getting around it. So let's, because, you know, I want to say thank you to all of you for bearing your hearts on this show, because my show is Conversations That Make a Difference for a reason. Every single one of you, through sharing in the book and on the show, are making a difference in the lives of somebody else, somebody who's going through that situation that you were in, having this similar story and don't know how to tell it, they can have their opportunity to tell it. And we'll talk about that before we close today. But go ahead, Peggy. I want to hear the rest of how you just shared that your son recognized that you weren't eating for 3 days consecutively with them at dinner time.
Yeah, you know, I've also, just for those of you guys that are listening, all the red flags are always there. We just get to make the choice if we look at them and what are we going to do about them. And, you know, sometimes we want to ignore them. I think that's human being in us. For me, when I look back, there's almost there's a pattern. And the pattern is when I get soup, I've always known my passion since I was a little girl. And so it doesn't shock me that I've been doing what I'm doing. But if I look back, there are chunks. And there are chunks of, let's call busyness or whatever we want to call it, where I was super aligned with my purpose and passion, which then involves what? Working really long hours, which people pat you on the back for. Right? Working out at the gym a lot, which they're like, oh, that's amazing. Not eating a lot. Oh, that's awesome. I mean, the things that people would say and do to me was acceptable for somebody who weighed 98 pounds at 5'6". If I'd have done it to somebody that was 200 pounds, I would have been kicked out of school. I've had my pants pulled down in the office. I've been told that, you know, a bad word, you know, I've been called many things and it's acceptable, you know, put on some weight. You wouldn't be cold, you know. You know, I don't say take off some weight, you won't be hot. It's that type of thing that people don't think about. And the body issues came in with being able to hide and miss fitness and, you know, competing in that world that's in a really unhealthy world. So as I looked at my kids following me, who were extremely competitive, type A, you know, look at your kids, look at who you hang around, look at what they're saying about you, look at the example that you're setting. And I think that's what wakes you up. You know, what kind of legacy do you want to create? Mm-hmm. My kids argued about the label, the nutrient label in the back of ranch dressing and Italian dressing sitting at dinner one night. And they're 7 years apart. And I looked at one holding ranch dressing and the other one, and they were probably 14 and 7. And I just thought, oh my God, this is me teaching them this wow. stuff. So how do you get out of this stuff? You get raw and real and you let people in your circle that you tell them these are my red flags and that I may get mad at you. I may cry. I may say I'm okay, but you have to let people in your circle. You have to let them call you out and admit sometimes, like Andy said, it doesn't go away. This isn't yeah. solved for me. It doesn't go away. My personality is still there and I try to capitalize on the good. And, heal myself along the way so I can help others.
Amen. I love it. I love it. I love you. I love all of you. My heart is like so full right now. Get the tissues, girls and boys. All right. So here I'm going to ask you one question. All right. So first of all, let's talk about, we have 5 minutes left before we have to go. Before I give Peggy the opportunity to talk about the next book, I want to ask you if there's one word quickly, if there's one word that you can say is relative to your experience of having shared your story in a book like this, coming out of through the process, you started writing, you put it all on paper, you said, oh my God, I'm bearing my soul. Okay, I'm going to let it go. And you push the button. Okay. And now you get to hold it in your hands with all the other people who were there. What's the one word that comes to you after having been part of this experience? I'm going to start with Ziggy. What's the word?
Blessed.
Blessed. Amen. Lejeune, what's your word?
Exuberance.
Nice. Exuberance. Andy, what's your word?
I probably would have followed Ziggy, but community. Community is awesome. Is really relevant for me.
Awesome. And I know Peggy's been really good at building the community that has been part of this process. Peggy, what's your word?
Supported.
Amen. Me. I got a chance to write in here too. And mine's about gratitude. And my word is absolutely grateful. I get to show up in a couple, right. wearing a couple of different hats for this. It's author, publisher, and media partner. And for every single one of those things, I am beyond grateful. So Peggy, we're going to do this again. We're going to do it again. We're going to do another book. So tell me about the second book.
All right. So this is a trilogy. So the second book is called Win the Wellness War, and the acronym WAR stands for We Are Responsible. It's time that we stand up and recognize that life is full of little battles, including health and wellness, and there are going to be little battles along the way. And potentially we could win the war. We might not win the war. We may have another war. So where are you? Where are you going? Who are your troops? What is your gear? Are you physically trained, you know, emotionally trained, financially trained? So we're going to do an exact same thing. More true stories of the heart, spirit, mind, and body. 30 contributing authors. You can go to Peggy. You can go to allthingswellness.com/author. Reserve your spot there. And we have media partners. Same song, second verse, coming out in the spring sometime.
Awesome. Awesome. I'm excited for that. And also the authors in this book also got a chance to write a story in an upcoming book that I'm putting together called A Daily Gift of Gratitude, which is part of the Daily Gift book series. And if you are interested in knowing more about that, and some of you have already submitted your stories, some of you haven't. So I'm going to be reminding you to go ahead and get the stories in so that we can move ahead and get this out before Thanksgiving. We want to be able to have a really lovely group of stories that express gratitude from so many different perspectives. And I can't wait to see all the stories. Some of them are in, some of them are coming in. So you get a chance to do that. And you can go to A Daily Gift of Gratitude to find that out. dailygiftofgratitude.com. And you can, if you actually here, how about this? If you have a story you want to submit, I'm going to give away places in the book. And you can text the word grateful, GRATEFUL, to this number, 570-230-4185. And the first 7 people who do that, send me, I'm going to get back to you and we're going to give you a page in the book so you can express your gratitude for something in your life that may have not gone so well. And yet at the end, you end up being grateful for it because it's brought you to a higher place. So, and each you're one of you, time. I'm so grateful for you.
Time. I'm sorry, you're out of time.
Thank you. We'll see you next time on Conversations That Make a Difference. Bye, everybody.
Tune in next time for Conversations That Make a Difference with host Teresa Velarde every Tuesday at 5 a.m. and 5 p.m. Eastern, with live call-in shows every first and third Tuesday on syndicated Dream Vision 7 radio network. Thank you for listening, and thank you to our producer, Rachel, and to our station owner, Deborah Beauvais, working behind the scenes. Be sure to go to conversationsthatmakeadifference.com for your free gift. Make sure your conversations make a difference.